Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mary Holmes here, our personal finance expert. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Jesse.
Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, go on. You too. The Beatles were famously on a rooftop.
They did. I don't know if you'd count that as a music video, no. And I thought it might be a bit of a dead giveaway.
But yes,
what was the song? What was the Beatles' song?
I can't remember. It was right at the end of their time together, wasn't it? Right at the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rachel, our technical operator, is making some noise. Which one was it? There were a few, okay. Oh, they did a concert on top of it.
Yeah, they did. It was neat.
Yeah, Don't Let Me Down is the one that springs to mind.
Yeah.
And Head Like a Hole, the New Zealand band, did their own rooftop concert, their cover of the Bruce Springsteen song, I'm on Fire. Anyway, you're not here to talk about music videos.
Oh, you're always welcome to. Sometimes I think it's more interesting.
No, this is a good one. And in fact, a lot of people are thinking about this at the moment with property prices possibly bottoming out. And some people might be thinking, well, if that's as low as they're going to go, I'm out.
Yeah, because they're only going back down to where they were before they boomed in the COVID year, actually. And so they're still way too expensive for a lot of people. And, you know, I think a lot of people are quite depressed about it. In fact, last time I was in here in RNZ, before I came into the studio with you, I was talking to a couple of people in the control room, three younger people, and they were sort of saying, oh, look, we've pretty much given up on home ownership. And I thought, gosh, here's three people with good jobs, you know, bright people out there in the world, saying,
they've just decided they're in a generation who won't get to do it.
Yeah, and feeling really negative about it. And I thought, well, no, it doesn't have to be all negative. Although, I mean, just noting the trend, back in the early 90s, before then, the percentage of homes that were households that owned their own home was rising and rising, and it got up to nearly three quarters of homes. And now it's down below two-thirds. So then the trend just turned back downwards, probably coinciding with the fact that house prices relative to incomes started turning around that point as well. They were used to be about three times the average income. The average household income and the average price of a house was about three times the average household income. And in recent years, it's got up to sort of 9 and 10,
yeah,
I think, and even more in some parts of the country.
I think we topped that chart. I remember seeing an Economist graph of where all the countries were, and I think New Zealand was the worst in the world.
Yes, which is the only
OECD anyway.
Really valid measure is house prices relative to incomes. If you just look at dollars, it doesn't mean much because incomes are different in different countries and all of that. But so that's what's happened. And
I will just mention too, some people may have heard this conversation on Morning Report today. They were talking to some real estate agents and they were saying they are seeing more first home buyers in auctions at the moment. A greater proportion of homes are going to first home buyers compared to the last few years. Some optimistic signs.
Yeah, I heard that too. And not that many investment property buyers in the market at the moment. And I thought, well, that's actually quite good for first home buyers because they haven't got these landlords and coming to auctions and outbidding them furiously, which is what's happened in recent years quite often. I think people, you know, terribly sad, they go along to an auction with great hopes, having done all their homework, and then someone outbids them, which is terribly discouraging. And a lot of people have found that not that many people are buying without family help. You know, so if you're in a family that can help you, parents often that can help you, Public Trust just recently did a survey and they found that 57% of homeowners received help from family to buy the home, so way more than, well, considerably more than half. got family help to do it, either getting money from the family or getting the property. I mean, quite often probably inheriting it, actually. Mm. But as home ownership's going down, people aren't being able to inherit properties from their parents because the parents, well, that will increasingly happen, didn't own the property in the first place, you know. So the trend is, it's worrying because it must be increasing inequality in New Zealand. You know, already there's trends that the society's becoming more unequal. Mm. And if the people with reasonably well-off families are able to buy and the others aren't, it just exacerbates that, yeah. Really. It's and the Public Trust found in their survey that attitudes are changing. Young people are not really looking at home ownership as a milestone anymore. They're just, whereas in my generation, we certainly did. You know, most of the people I knew, we bought homes quite young, actually. Mm. And it was doable back then. But
so that's all the bad news.
Yes. On a more positive note, it can work quite well to be a long-term renter. You know, and I think New Zealanders are so stuck in this, you've got to own your own home, and that's the message young people's parents are giving them. And it's not necessarily true. I mean, look, I'm not denying that when you're a tenant, it's hard in a lot of ways. One thing, a landlord can come along and sell the property and you have to move out. And in fact, that happened to my son at one point. He and his partner were told the place would be available for quite a few years, and they started really developing a garden. And then a year later, we're sorry, we've changed our mind, we're going to sell. And they'd actually planted little shrubs and all sorts of things there, you know, and they were devastated by that.
We got our marching orders from a rental property as our first baby was about to be born.
Oh, really? 2011. Yes. Yeah. Yes, well, those are the kind of things that happen unsettling. To tenants. And there's no denying that. But there are more and more build-to-rent properties being built around the country. You know, they're like apartment buildings that are being built for, I think individual people buy the apartments as landlords and then rent them out. And they're more a long-term lease idea. They're not.
We've covered on this show, there's an organisation, Simplicity Living, which is a combination of a KiwiSaver provider and a housing developer that have really gone in to create those sorts of homes.
Yes, yes, Simplicity's doing some interesting stuff in that area. And they're not the only ones. I think that is a trend that's happening around the country. And so as more big buildings are being built as rental, long-term rental property, we're going to see more of the European-type situation where people, are, you know, in parts of Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, countries like that, the majority of people, I think, in some cases, don't ever own a home and do fine. They have long, long-term leases, and they're there for good. And that's something that I think New Zealanders can start looking out for. If you're thinking, OK, I'm going to be a long-term renter, tell your landlord, new landlord, that. My idea would be that both of you might say, let's have a year's trial run. We'll have a year's lease. But then if things are going well, sign up for a 10-year lease, which can suit both sides. Ah. Really well, you know, from the landlord's point of view, they've got a good person in there, and
would that hold up legally though? If they suddenly decided, oh, for whatever reason, I'm going to need to sell it, or
I don't know. I'm not sure about all of that. I do know that the law has made it harder for landlords just to boot people out, but I'm not an expert in that.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. At least an agreement, anyway.
Yes.
You know, whether it's a legally binding one or not.
Yeah.
Just let each other know your intentions.
Should hold, usually, I hope, yeah. And look, the advantages of renting, there's quite a few of them, I reckon. Those of us who own homes know about the sort of worries we have about maintenance of the house. You know, there are things that some friend says to you, oh, you're going to have to do some work on that soon. And it kind of hangs over you psychologically as well as financially, I think, sometimes, because, oh, gosh, I'm not quite sure how to do that, etc. As a tenant, it's often easier to live close to downtown, which can work really well for quite a few people, not everybody, but that quite often works. It's much easier to move house if you're if you're a tenant, you can do it much more easily, much cheaper than if you own a house. And another thing, when we're looking at the finances of it, if you're because I'm going to get to this in a minute, I might as well cut to it now. The way to make this work is to save quite seriously for retirement, because if you in fact don't ever buy a house, you're going to need a lot more money in retirement than people who've got a mortgage-free home at that point. And so you've really got to get in and save quite seriously for your accommodation for the rest of your life.
For your ongoing rental, yeah.
Yes. But the big advantage of that for people who don't own a home is that you can invest quite broadly in shares, bonds, you know, index funds and all of that, and get that diversification and quite often faster growth than your friend who's all their investments really going into their house
while
paying off the mortgage.
Is this the right word? You'd have more liquidity, like if your investments,
absolutely.
If you needed some money, you could take out a chunk.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. Yes, yes, you can.
Whereas your friend who might have a $2 million house, but how do they get $1,000 if they need it?
Yes, that's quite right. In an emergency, that's a really good point, actually. Another plus we can have for renting.
I think it's the first time I've ever added to your notes, Mira. It's a great day after how many years,
Jesse,
with you on the show.
That's not true. Yeah. That's not true. You've done it often. So it's not, I'm not just saying, look, just give up on buying a house and continue enjoying the fact that it costs less for you to rent than it does for your friend to own a home, because then you're going to face quite a dismal retirement if you do that. But what I suggest people do is ask a friend who's got a home how much they spend each month on their mortgage, on their rates and their insurance and their maintenance, and basically save the same amount. I mean, you're paying rent, and I think in the vast majority of cases, rent is not going to be as high as all of those, the mortgage and the rates and the insurance and the maintenance. And by the way, when you're asking a friend how much they spend on maintenance, quite often they'll say nothing, I didn't spend anything this year or last year. But that can suddenly catch up to you.
A new roof, for example.
Exactly, exactly. Or something suddenly starts leaking or something, and so you end up having to spend a lot of money. So don't sort of be too casual about how much you might be spending on maintenance. But so if the renter is saving up that sort of amount of money, you've got this great big, you know, you're hopefully retiring then with, I don't know, $500,000 or something like that. We're talking about here to make sure you've got a comfortable retirement. And the thing about doing that is that you can change your mind at any point too. Meanwhile, these savings you're building up could be a nice big deposit on a home. And quite often when people have kids or perhaps they really want a garden that they can really develop, or as they're retiring they say, look, I really do want my own home at this point. Mm. And you can still do that. You can change your mind whenever you want to. Another point about that, and I'm really reluctant to ever predict what's going to happen to house prices or share prices or anything like that, but we were talking earlier about house prices relative to incomes, and I just can't believe that they're going to stay that far out of whack in New Zealand, where house prices are sort of 8, 9, 10 times the average income.
You feel like something's got to give.
It feels to me, even though maybe in the current downturn of house prices they have stopped falling, maybe that's what some people are guessing, really.
Can I just share the perspective of someone on text who points out that maybe that, you know, 9 incomes to 1 house value sounds a lot worse than it used to be, but we sometimes have, or often have, 2 incomes now contributing to the mortgage, whereas 30 years ago it would have been much more common to have just 1 income.
Have just
in a
one,
household.
Or more like 50 probably years ago. We are talking about total household incomes,
it is total household.
It's total household incomes, yes, and so.
All right, you win.
Yeah. yes. The So anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if, I'm talking over the next couple of decades, yeah, really, that house prices relative to incomes, well, the other thing that can happen is that house prices might just stop falling, but they might not rise very fast. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens for quite a while. And meanwhile, incomes are rising. And so we can catch up that way. Yeah. So in the meantime, just a sort of final thing about where you might put your savings. You can certainly put them in KiwiSaver. It's not a bad place, because if you change your mind and want to buy a first home, you can get it out of KiwiSaver. And if you don't, it's got the money locked in until you're retired, and that's quite good, because that's what we're talking about here, is actually not
discipline
squandering
saving
your money in the meantime. Yes, yeah. So, but put it in a higher risk fund, in or out of KiwiSaver, I would recommend, because that's where you're going to get the long-term growth. And don't panic when it goes down. Just stick with it. And if you're really wanting to get serious about getting your money into KiwiSaver or something else, it's a good idea to set up automatic transfers from your bank account into KiwiSaver or into another fund. Every payday, you know, be transferring $50, $100, $200, whatever you can. After a while, you just forget that's happening. It's just building up for you. Yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
It's a pleasure, Jesse.
Great to have you in. Mary Holm, talking money. And if you want to catch this conversation from the beginning, it'll be up online and on demand in just a few minutes' time. And all the conversations I've had with Mary over the years, probably 6 or 7 years now, we've covered just about every aspect of personal finances. You can find them on our podcasts page or on Mary's own website, maryholm.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.